Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 11th of January. And we talk about cars this hour and trucks. The Hyundai Elantra and Land Rover Range Rover Evoque, I think that's how you pronounce it, were named the North American Car and Truck of the Year by a panel of independent automotive journalists. And one of those journalists is with us this hour at the 2012 North American International Auto Show, which took place Monday, a couple days ago. The Elantra beat out the Ford Focus and Volkswagen Passat as finalists for the Car of the Year, and we'll talk about what that means and all the other cars that were in the competition, whether or not we're looking more and more at fuel efficiency as a criteria for winning Car of the Year. And smaller cars were in great number this year in finalists. And why is that the case? So joining us this hour is Michelle Edmonds. She is, Michelle Krebs is her name. It's not Michelle Edmonds. Michelle Krebs is Edmonds.com senior analyst and AutoObserver.com editor in chief. Michelle Krebs has covered the auto industry for 30 years now, writing for publications ranging from the New York Times to Motor Trend. She's been an adjunct professor of business at Detroit's College for Creative Studies, has served as president of the Automotive Press Association in Detroit, and as a juror, as I said, on the North American Car and Truck of the Year, and as a juror on the Car of the Century. She talks about the ballot for voting on the North American Car and Truck of the Year awards arriving in her email on November 28, and what that was like for her. And we'll talk about who she voted for. And we'll welcome your phone calls. I know many of you like to talk about cars, and you'll have your thoughts, too, about what should have won, or maybe you'll enthusiastically endorse those that won. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Kathleen.
Oh, you sound chipper today.
I've been up a while. I've already been at the auto show.
Have you really?
Yeah.
You have been up for a while. How many cars have you owned? Are you a car person? Have you owned a lot of cars?
Oh, yes. And I always try to, I don't know the count, but I always try to buy different brands. I always try to use different dealerships. So I have an experience much like the regular consumer does.
Mm-hmm. So when you got that email on November 28th asking you to vote for the Car of the Year, what did you think? Did you know right off the bat who you thought it was going to be? You didn't?
No, it was a
really
tough job this year. I've been a juror on the North American Car and Truck of the Year for many, many years. It's been in existence for 19. I think I've been there all of those. This year was an interesting year because we had a long, long list of cars, and we got it down to 17, which is hard to choose from. And if you looked at that list, it was very clear that this was the year of the small car. Something like, I think it was a dozen of the cars on that list of 17 achieved over 40 miles per gallon, then a couple more were over 30 miles per gallon. So clearly the year of the small car. So for me, then we, winnowed it down, and the finalist, as you mentioned, were the Hyundai Elantra, the Ford Focus, and the Volkswagen Passat, which isn't really it's not a small car, it's a mid-sized car. But for me, it became a battle of the Elantra and the Focus, since this was the year of the small car.
Yeah, and why was it the year of the small car?
Well, we are facing much more stringent fuel economy standards as of 2016. So all of the automakers are introducing small, very fuel-efficient cars. 40 miles per gallon, it seems to be the magic number right now. We just had a lot of new products entering the fray. And then this coming year, we'll see the same thing happen in the mid-size car segment.
Mm-hmm. Hyundai has certainly become prominent in the last few years. What have they done to become so successful, Michelle?
Well, Hyundai came into the market in the U.S., I can't remember exactly the year, but they came in with great guns. They sold a lot of cars, and then they ran into quality problems. So they had to kind of regroup, and they, if you'll remember, they put in these long warranties, which still exist, and And then they started going back to their research labs and starting doing a lot of work on engineering. So they made their engines better. And then in the last few years, they've really caught people's attention because they've got, you know, better quality. They've got better engineering for engines and that kind of thing. But they've added fresh styling, much more stylish cars. We saw that with Hyundai Sonata, which is a mid-sized car, a few years ago. That won the car of the year, too, by the way, in its year.
Hmm.
It was in segments that are kind of boring, square box cars. They came in with some flash, and that has caused a lot of attention.
Mm-hmm. You have written about the Audi A6 and A7, which people in your business say are glorious cars and they're favorites of jurors, but they were the only luxury cars to make the list because we're much more concerned in this tough economic time about the price of a car.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and those are fabulous cars, by the way. I had the money, I'd buy one. I think we're in these frugal times, and I think we'll come out of this. We've been in these doldrums, and actually, you know, having come from the Detroit Auto Show, which this week is the press week, and then it opens to the public Saturday, you will see that there's been this trepidation by manufacturers to put a lot of focus on luxury cars and sports cars and, you know, a lot of flash, but you're starting to see some glitz and glamour come back. So I wouldn't rule out in the future that the car of the year will be a luxury car. And in fact, we may see an interesting battle evolve this year. We've got some new Cadillacs. We've got some new Lincolns. We've got some new, all of them have new. The new Mercedes SL is at the show, new BMW 3 Series. So we're going to see a comeback of people not being so scared to show off their luxury cars.
Hmm. And why do people like glitz and glamour? Some people like glitz and glamour in their cars.
Well, for an auto show, it is a show, and that's part of the entertainment. The cars are really, for many people, aren't just a practical purchase of getting from here to there. They're also a statement of their personality,
yes.
A statement of
yes.
the fact that they've achieved a certain level in life in terms of their profession and monetary status. So they want to show that off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, during this recession, there's been a reluctance to do that.
Right. Yeah, people are holding on to their cars a lot longer, aren't they, Michelle?
Yes, they're ancient. And in fact, I think that's why we're at Edmunds, we're encouraged that sales will increase this year and more again next year, because the average car on American roads is now almost 11 years old.
Holy
that's a
Toledo.
Record.
Isn't that something?
Right. And Ford actually cited a interesting metric that 1 in 5 cars on American roads is actually between 11 and 15 years old. So I think it speaks well of how what a great job automakers have done in terms of quality, reliability, dependability of cars lasting a long time. But it causes people to hang on to their old jalopies for as long as they can.
Right. Well, tell me about when that shift took place, because I remember my dad. My dad loved cars, and I have a lot of lists of all the cars he's ever owned. But every 3 years, and he wasn't a wealthy guy, but every 3 years he would get another car.
That was not uncommon, and you know, some time ago, and we did used to see a lot of that when leasing was strong. What happened in 2008 when right after the Lehman collapse? And the banks were in trouble, credit dried up. And so people weren't able to get car loans. But more importantly, in that regard, for luxury cars, they were not able to get leasing. A lot of companies got out of the leasing business. And so, you know, you have to turn your car back in after every 3 years when you have a lease. And that just was not happening. Now, the interesting sidebar of that is that there wasn't a used car developing. If you weren't leasing cars and you weren't selling many new ones, you didn't have this used car market. And so, and then we also had a program called Cash for Clunkers, where you could turn in your
right.
old clunker and get a more fuel efficient vehicle. That took a lot of cars out of the used car market. And that, because there's a small supply, high demand, of course, prices go up. So that's another reason we're optimistic about new car sales, because there isn't much of a used car market to go to.
Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. So what have you seen at the auto show this week that really knocked you out?
There is a lot of stuff, because we've got a lot of glitz and glamour coming back, but we've also got a lot of bread and butter. So two interesting vehicles I'm looking at because they are very popular with the American public. There is a new Ford Fusion, which is a mid-sized car that has done very well sales-wise and is very popular. Ford has really cranked it up a notch on styling. If you look at the front of it, it looks very much like an Aston Martin. It will come in not only, it comes with all-wheel drive, comes with lots of different versions, lots of high fuel economy engines. It also comes as a hybrid and a plug-in hybrid that Ford claims will get the equivalent of 100 miles per gallon, which is it's not exactly an equivalent to electric cars. Electric isn't exactly an equivalent but to gasoline, but gives you some kind of idea. But so those will be rolling out. Now, right across the aisleway at the show is the new Honda Accord, and it's being shown in a concept version, but Honda usually is pretty close to the production version. So those are main competitors, and Honda's has stayed more conservative on styling, but, you know, the Honda Accord is one of the best-selling vehicles in America. So, there's the new Chevy Malibu. So there are all these new mid-sized cars, the Volkswagen Passat, the Toyota Camry was redone. So I see 2012 being the year of the mid-sized car, and you may see some good incentives for consumers because there's going to be a real battle for the customer in that segment.
Mm-hmm. So why is it the mid-sized car this year and it was the small car last year?
It just happens to be that's the way of the cycle of, cars have a certain life. They change them about every 4 years. So it just happens that this is the mid-size cycle. I think this will be a big year for continued growth in the crossover segment, the kind of the little sport utility vehicles that are built on car platforms instead of trucks. You're seeing the whole industry, because of fuel economy requirements, go away from the big sport utilities that are built on truck architectures, which don't handle as well as a car and also don't get as much good fuel economy. And you're going to see a lot more of those small crossovers, which are pretty interesting. They're very utilitarian, but very attractive and very practical.
Let's go to phone calls. Let me give you the number again, 800-486-8655. Michelle Krebs, editor-in-chief of AutoObserver.com, is our guest. The auto show, of course, going on in Detroit right now, and she's already been there this morning. She is here to talk about the great cars of 2012, the ballots for voting on the 2012 North American Car and Truck of the Year have been counted, and the winners have been announced, and we're talking with her this hour about the cars and trucks of the year. I guess most of us interested in the cars, but some of you might be interested in the trucks of the year as well. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Cody in Oshkosh, our first caller. Hi, Cody.
Hi. I'm glad to hear that there's more smaller SUVs coming out, but I guess I would have to complain. I've been looking for a very small four-wheel drive. I had to get a 95 Geo Tracker to get anything light enough for my purposes. Otherwise, I was looking at a Suzuki Samurai. There's very limited in that category, and just in general, in small cars. I used to have a Geo Metro 10 years ago that got 57 miles to the gallon. Where are the cars that can get this kind of gas mileage? Thank you.
Well, we'll get there. I mean, the 2025 fuel economy standards are even stiffer than the 2016. We're looking at low 50 mile per gallon. Now, the thing that people have to understand, though, is just because you see that on the sticker, that may not be the mileage you get, because the Environmental Protection Agency measures it a different way. Your caller is talking about some very old vehicles that don't even exist on today's roads. But, you know, I would say some of the new small sport utilities that I think are real promising are the Ford Escape. That's going to be new this year, coming out in the fall, I believe. Honda just introduced the Honda CR-V. And then, of course, there's the venerable Toyota RAV4 that's in there as well. So there's a lot more choice. At the auto show, we saw the Buick Encore, which is a small sport utility. I think that one will be very popular with women, maybe empty nest professional women. So Nissan also introduced the new Pathfinder, which, again, is not the truck kind of sport utility, but more car-like and better fuel economy.
Well, let's go back to those empty nest professional women, why would they be attracted to that kind of SUV?
Because it still has all-wheel drive, so they feel more confident in snowy conditions. A lot of women always liked SUVs because you sat up a little higher. It has a lot of cargo space and versatility, and you can fold the seats in various ways and get more space. Now, and the Buick Encore specifically is they're all very maneuverable. You can park them easily. The turning radius is very small, so you can get in and out of tight spaces. And then they get good fuel economy.
Are they safe?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's hard to find anything that's not safe anymore. I mean, everybody has to meet certain standards. Everybody strives to get the 5-star rating. It's becoming the playing field is more level than ever, and the state of all of the vehicles has risen to the highest level I've seen in a long time.
Cody, thanks for the call. Al in Abrams is next. Hi, Al.
Hi. I'm just curious, with the interest in higher gas mileage and small cars, why things like the Geo Metro that got 55 miles a gallon. Rode really nice, handled like a sports car. You can't find anything even closely approaching that anymore.
How old is it, Al, your car?
Pardon?
How old is your car?
Well, mine was a 94. A friend of mine still drives it. It has over 200,000 miles on
wow.
it. Still gets 50 miles a gallon.
I will say that, first of all, that was the offspring of a relationship between GM and Suzuki that doesn't exist anymore. In addition, since 1994, there have been a whole lot of safety standards that have been put in. And every time you add a piece of equipment to a vehicle, that adds weight, and that means that it doesn't get the same fuel economy. I would say there's a lot of good stuff out there. The Ford Fiesta, the Hyundai Elantra, the Chevy Sonic is a terrific new little car. There's a lot of new stuff out there, so, go out and take a look.
And it's always fun to go out and take a look, isn't it?
And then, an auto show is the best place to do it because you can compare one against the other without going out into
right.
the elements.
Yeah, right.
Although I have to say the elements here have been amazing. It's almost 50 degrees here in Detroit.
I know. Isn't it something? But it's going to change, Michelle.
It will.
Yeah.
It will.
Michelle Krebs, editor-in-chief of AutoObserver.com. We're talking about the best cars of 2012 and the best cars of 2011 and just the best cars. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Tune into Wisconsin Public Television tonight at 8 for Nature. Visit Canberra, Australia's sprawling capital, where a mob of street-smart kangaroos has taken up residency. Find out what happens when two very different species are forced to coexist. Kangaroo Mob, tonight at 8, only on Wisconsin Public Television.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Sprint Print, serving Dane County businesses since 1987 with full-service printing, including large-format signs, banners, and more. Details and information at SprintPrint.com.
Tomorrow during this time period, the authors of Van Gogh, The Life, I'm heavily involved in reading about Van Gogh now, and it's just a really fascinating book in terms of, as I was telling Chrissy earlier, it looks at so many different aspects of, there's history involved, there's mental illness involved, there's family relationships and how we raise our children and how we observe nature and how our parents support us and relationships with siblings. It's just really, really a well-done book. And we'll talk about Van Gogh with the authors tomorrow at 10. Back to phone calls. Ken in La Crosse is next. Hi, Ken.
Morning, Kathleen.
Hi, Ken.
So many of your past callers today comments about the fuel economy of the older cars. I've had a number of older small cars that got 40, 35, 40, 45 miles to the gallon. Currently, I'm driving a 2003 Olzolero that I get 32 miles to the gallon, and it's got a V6 engine in it. I often think, why can't, just like the other cars, why can't they build cars inexpensively that get the 40 miles to the gallon? Several years ago, I'm working at a company, I've been there 15 years, and I was about ready to buy a new Camaro, and I got bit by the economy.
Right.
So that kind of went out the window. Now I drive, all my vehicles are older. My newest is a 2004. My oldest is a 2001 pickup truck. And it just seems that no matter what the new manufacturers come out with, they just don't seem to make one that's really affordable to somebody like myself. I work at a factory. I make $20 an hour. But with today's economy, with a family, $20 an hour supports your family, and that's about it.
Right. Michelle.
Well, one, that is a concern to us as well. And, where it's really concerning us is the youth market because, that young millennial demographic is one of the biggest population booms we've ever seen next to the baby boomers. And yet they have been really socked by unemployment, and they were hurt worse than anyone by the recession. So, part of the issue is we have increased regulations as to what has to go on a car, what the emissions are, what the fuel economy is, the safety features. Since, Alto Villalero, which is Alto Villa, has been long gone, we now have to have stability control systems on the cars. You have to have more airbags. You have to have roof structures for rollover crashes. You have to have side beams in vehicles so for side impact crashes. So there are a lot of the cost of the car is to meet regulations and keep people safe.
Thank you, Ken, for the call. Let's go to email here. Robin in Appleton. I now own a 2002 Santa Fe and absolutely love it, although I'd really like one to get even better gas mileage. Mine is the mid-high 20s. It has 110,000 miles, still going strong. I would love to own another one for my next vehicle, but I'm holding out, hoping they will make a hybrid. Any idea what Hyundai's plans are for the Santa Fe's future?
I'm sure there will be another one. They make that in the United States now. Hyundai just got into the hybrid business. I think they have a ways to go in terms of refining it, but they do have a Sonata hybrid. So I'm sure we will be seeing that expanded through other models, and the Santa Fe would be a perfect example of one to do that on.
Sean in Green Bay, hi.
Good morning, Michelle and Kathleen. I've had a long-time interest in the benefits, the torque and gas mileage benefits of smaller diesel engines. And I know in other markets they're more popular, such as Europe. I'm wondering if you see that moving to the U.S. market more in the future, like, for instance, a small diesel truck or smaller diesel cars, much like Volkswagen is doing.
Good question. And, we journalists love diesels. Now, there's part of the problem is, they do have torque advantages. You can, take off faster. You get better fuel economy. Here's the problem in the United States versus Europe, because in Europe, half the market or more in certain countries are diesels. And there's been tremendous strides in diesel, advancements in diesel technology in Europe. The problem is the way the fuel pricing is here in the United States. Many times the price of diesel fuel is far higher than gasoline, whereas in Europe and a lot of other countries, diesel is cheaper and gasoline is more. But you are seeing an increased number of diesel engines introduced in the U.S. Volkswagen and Audi have a bunch of them, BMW and Mercedes as well. The Chevrolet Cruze from General Motors is going to have a diesel engine coming up. Just this last week, Chrysler announced that the Jeep Grand Cherokee will have a diesel engine. So I do think we will be seeing more diesel engines. The economics just don't work as well in the U.S. as they do in Europe.
And do you know why that is, why the gas prices of diesel are
more expensive? It has to do with the tax structure of our tax structure with gasoline and diesel versus how they do it in Europe. And Europe made a decision many, many years ago to tackle its emissions problems, which are, you know, were a big problem there environmentally, and attack it through diesel. So they made this concerted effort, and that's why you saw a lot more development happen in Europe. So a lot of the diesel technology we will see or are seeing in the U.S. is coming out of Europe.
Oh, well, thank you much.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Another email, Dave in Rice Lake. We purchased a 2012 Elantra Touring in November. It seems to be a good car, a bit stiff in the suspension, but decent fuel economy, nice fit and finish at a very reasonable price.
Well, the Hyundai Elantra won the North American Car of the Year, so, and they sold 200,000 of those this past year, so you're not alone. Hyundai has come a tremendously long way in terms of styling, fit and finish, very good quality of materials on the interior for a small and expensive car, and they pack those cars with value. Now, they have a little bit of a currency advantage over, say, Europeans and Americans, so that makes it easier. I do think that the next step for the Korean automakers like Hyundai and Kia is to focus on a level of refinement in terms of the ride and handling and the noise levels in cars. I keep encouraging the Hyundai executives to go out and hire the best German ride and handling engineers they can find, and then they'll have a real winner.
Oh, interesting. Tell me how the tsunami has affected the availability of cars this year, Toyota and Honda specifically.
They have been hurt badly. March 11th, the earthquake and tsunami hit in Japan, and it shut down a tremendous amount of production from all of the Japanese makers. Toyota and Honda have been the last to get back on their feet. Nissan got back much quicker. The other thing we saw is there were certain parts that were made, like especially electronic parts, that were made in Japan and only Japan, and that hurt. We even saw some shut up for production of some other vehicles, Chrysler and GM vehicles. But Honda is still trying to replenish its pipeline of vehicles. This past year, there were times you would go to a Honda dealership and not see you'd see a lot of asphalt and not many cars on the lot. So both of them got hurt in sales. Both in this year that we had sales up 10% as an industry, their sales were actually down 6 or 7%. And so now they're getting back on their feet, and they've got some new product, and they've got that pipeline replenishing. So you will see Honda and Toyota be much more aggressive in the marketplace, which is good news for consumers.
Mm-hmm. The 2012 Honda Civic. Civics are big in this country. There are a lot of Civics. It was, as you say in one of your columns, much maligned. Rightfully so?
Well, we're very harsh critics. The head of Honda, and I was speaking with the head of Honda, and he was saying, you know, we can't just be good. We have to be exceptional because that's the expectation. I think both Honda and Toyota have become rather complacent in recent years. They have been on top. And, you know, reputations for quality and that kind of thing for years. And I think they've gotten a little complacent about in terms of stretching a little bit in terms of styling, being a little withholding, like, new technologies and, you know, where others have had to step up. I think they've underestimated the competition, how fast that's caught up. So the new Honda Civic was just an evolution when other automakers were stepping way beyond Civic in it. Now, that being said, Honda's going to sell a heck of a lot of Civics. It always does. It always will.
Scott in La Crosse. Hi, Scott.
Hi there, Kathleen.
Hi.
You know, the first couple callers really prompted me to want to call in because these are folks who are talking about, you know, the old metros and the cars that you know, why they could get such good gas mileage then as opposed to now when, you know, theoretically the engines should be improving and the technology of getting good gas mileage seems to be improving. And one thing that I've heard about that I've found and am just, it's something I just dislike a lot, and I know your guest there has spoken about the need for EPA and safety branded. But for me, the issue becomes all these convenience factors. You know, try to find a car that doesn't have power windows. Try to find a car that doesn't have power seats. And my issue, I have three issues with that. First of all, it costs more to start with because you got to pay for that. Second of all, for me, it's just something else that I worry about getting going wrong and having to fix. And third, it cuts down on the mileage. All those motors, those that are powering those windows, have weight and go that way. So I guess my question is anybody thinking, you know, in kind of a contrarian degree here, is any manufacturer saying, well, you know, we can cope with the EPA and the safety requirements, but we're not going to give you all these factors. We're going to let you crank up your own windows for a little exercise every day, and it'll cost less, it'll get better fuel economy, and you'll have fewer things to worry about going wrong.
Well, the economics of that doesn't always, while it, you think it makes more sense to the manufacturer, it costs less to build it, whatever, that isn't always the case. So, and I would say the company that's thought about that is Tata Motors in India with the Nano, which was a $2,500 car, and let me tell you, they aren't doing all that well in India either. Here's the deal. The majority of people don't want that basic EconoBox. They want the stuff on it. And in fact, if we've seen anything, they want even more in their small cars because a lot of people are downsizing from bigger cars. And on a, from a manufacturing level, when you've only got things that, 5% of the vehicles you're producing have that kind of base thing, it really, cost-wise, makes more sense to just, and simplifies the manufacturing operation if you just eliminate crank windows in all of them, do power windows in all, because you've cut down on the complexity in the manufacturing plant. And frankly, you know, the voices we're hearing this morning are really the minority. We're just not hearing that people want less in their cars. We're hearing what they want more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
So for the first time in my life, I'm being told I'm out of step with the American public. What a shocker. Thank you, folks.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you, Scott, for the call. Let's go next to Ted on the road. Hi, Ted.
Hi, how are you doing today?
All right, Ted, how are you?
I'm going to let you know that I am a car guy, and I'm not concerned about why I'm concerned about it, but I'm more concerned in liking what I drive. I've been that way my whole life. And
uh-huh.
I had an 06 Monte Carlo that I could consistently get 32 to 34 miles a gallon on the road with it, and it had power windows and power seats. So to say there aren't cars out there that get mileage, people just aren't looking. And I don't think you need to cram into a four-cylinder EconoBox to get a car that really rides and drives and performs. And you can talk to anybody that's ever driven a Buick LeSabre that they made for years that consistently got 30 miles to the gallon. And I think it's just pure marketing and consumerism that makes people think they have to have what they have to have. And also along those lines, the EPA, I believe, redid the mileage guides a year or two ago to be more in step with reality than what you actually did get.
What are you driving? What are you driving now, Ted?
Right now, I drive a Chevy Impala that gets 30 miles to the gallon. But at Monte Carlo, I had an 06 that got over 30 miles a gallon consistently. And so the old Buick LeSabre.
Uh-huh.
So you can ask anybody that owned one, you know.
Michelle.
Yes, well, absolutely. I mean, I think the earlier callers are just not looking. There are cars out there that get that. Yeah, I mean, they're out there. They're out there. And a lot of it depends on who you drive. You know, I'm not particularly conservative about the way I drive, so I don't get the best fuel economy, perhaps. But a lot of it has to do with how you drive. And I totally agree, and we're very concerned about the EPA stickers showing a certain number and then, you know, people not getting that. And it's strictly because those engines are tested in this perfect environment, not out on the roads, in this laboratory. And we're just very concerned that people are going to be very upset when they don't get these highly touted numbers, and because of the way the testing is done. There's a lawsuit going on out in California against Honda. A woman who is suing Honda because she's not getting the mileage that's advertised on the sticker. And I think this is going to be a serious perception problem that, you know, the EPA needs to get a grip on.
So what do you think? What, is there a rule of thumb here that you automatically knock so many miles per gallon off the sticker price?
No, there isn't really a rule like that because it so depends on your driving conditions. I mean, do you drive fast? Do you do jackrabbit starts? Do you... you do highway driving? Do you do city driving? And, you know, a lot of this you have to think about this, too, when you buy a hybrid car or an electric car, which will there be many, many more of in the future, because your driving style has a lot to do with how much range you'll get in an electric car, for example, or how much fuel economy you'll get in a hybrid. They tend to be the opposite. You get better fuel economy in the city stop and go because that's where they're ideal versus highway, which is where gasoline engines do better. There's a lot more to consider in buying a car these days.
Right. Michelle Krebs is our guest, editor-in-chief of AutoObserver.com. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our phone lines are, oh, no, they're not. There, somebody said goodbye, so there is one line open right now. But you can always use the email in case you get frustrated. And we'll continue in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to another email, Michelle. This one from Jack. Can you tell me why there's so much interest in SUVs when the minivan does everything better? It handles better, more space, more comfortable, better gas mileage. I have a new stylish Honda. I can't imagine a better all-around vehicle for families. I've never been stuck in snow with front-wheel drive, although in some extreme cases, all-wheel drive might be desired. Is the American interest in brawn? I often wonder about the sensibility of buying groceries with a 4-ton, 15-mile-per-hour vehicle.
Well, minivan sales are not what they used to be, that's for sure. And a lot of the players have gotten out of the game. In fact, General Motors and Ford are totally out of the minivan market. The only ones left now are Chrysler, which dominated the market for a long time with the Dodge Caravan, Grand Caravan, the Chrysler Town and Country. They're going to actually go to just one minivan for the whole company. The Nissan Quest is still in the market, but it's a pretty small player. So the biggies are Honda Odyssey and Toyota Sienna. I think it's all image. People went to SUVs because they looked rugged and they had this cool appeal, whereas minivans just are stuck with that soccer mom image. And, you know, I was at a dinner last night when one of my colleagues said, oh, my wife would never drive a Honda Odyssey or a Toyota Sienna, even though they're perfect for the family, just because of the image. So it's all up in the head.
Yeah. It's so many,
okay, so dollar
so many
for dollar and space for space, minivans really do the job.
Yeah. Peter in Stoughton, hi.
Good morning. Sean from Green Bay took my question about diesel engines, but what you were just talking about is probably the answer to my next question, which is why are companies like Volvo and Audi and even Ford no longer making station wagons available in North America?
Well, there's another love we have as journalists. We love station wagons. Station wagons are so popular in Europe, and when you go to Europe, they're like, oh, look at those cool station wagons. Americans don't like them. They don't buy them. And so there are very few sold in the United States. And the ones that are sold, we call them something else. We don't call them station wagons. But, you know, Volkswagen has the Jetta. They call it the Sport Wagon, which comes with a diesel engine, by the way, and that's a very popular package. So there aren't many. You know, the Europeans still bring in a few, but they are very niche players.
Hmm. Thank you, Peter. Mark in Wausau. Hi, Mark.
Good morning, everyone. Currently, I'm driving a 2004 Buick LeSabre, and it has a 3.8 engine, 205 horse. With about 90,
I know that engine well.
Yes, 90,000 miles in the car. When I take it in for an oil change, I always have a conversation with different techs at different dealerships, and they tell me, this car, this engine is the best engine General Motors ever produced. It'll easily go over 200,000 miles without a problem. And I'm wondering, why did General Motors drop this 3.8?
Well, I had one of those, too. I had a Pontiac Bonneville, and when the body was a mess, and, you know, the car was a mess, sold it. People were lined up just to get by the engine. It's an older technology. It's the pushrod engine technology, which is now not so popular. and it's just given away to, you know, technology advances.
Interesting, because the tech I talked to, I said, what are you driving? He said, an older Grand Prix. I bought it with 205,000 miles on it.
Oh.
No major engine work. He said, I've got over 300,000.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scratching my head, and I'm going, why would they give up such a great engine?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mark, very much for the call. August in Cottage Grove. Hi, August.
Hey, I just wanted to echo what you guys were talking about earlier with Honda and Toyota kind of losing their way. I drive an 08 Honda Fit, and I really think it's kind of the last true Honda that has that true, beautiful simplicity in engineering and design. I mean, you look back just 15 years ago, and every Honda would be kind of crude by today's standards as far as add-ons and technology. But that's really kind of how they kind of got their foothold with, you know, they focusing on the engine and the handling and, you know, transmission, things like that, rather than all the kind of doodads.
And that's one of the things they are going to try to emphasize again. They are coming out with a whole new family of engines, and they are, you know, they trying to get the focus back on. Honda was known as this little engineering company, known for great engines, that kind of thing. And they've had their issues. They've had a lot of problems with transmissions, and so they're trying to get back to those engineering roots. We'll see if they'll be successful. I do think that one of the things that happened that hurt the all the Japanese makers, and Toyota and Honda specifically, but was when Toyota had all of the recalls. I think it caused people to say, well, wait a minute. I bought them for their bulletproof quality. Now I'm not so sure anymore. And so that opened the door for other companies like Hyundai and Kia. And frankly, that helped Ford get back on its feet as well. And I think now, and now there's such, everybody's got good products. So it's opened the door. So I wonder if all the old Honda and Toyota buyers will come back.
Hmm. Thanks, August. What about Kia? Did any of their cars make the list?
Let's see. I cannot remember, but they are doing, you know, they've had a tremendous run too. They've got the Kia Soul, which is that little quirky square car that's sold by the hamsters on TV, has done really well. It had a record year of more than 100,000 sales. I mean, Honda Element in that category has gone away. It's just left everybody in the dust. So they have done really well with that. I'm sitting here looking at one right now, in fact. And then the Kia Optima is a brand new car. It shares a lot of the same architecture as the Hyundai Sonata, because Kia and Hyundai are affiliated. So they share a lot of the engines and technologies, and that has a hybrid version. They've been on a roll as well.
Mm-hmm.
They're just a little bit smaller player than Hyundai, but if you combine the two, they in the world they're like the fifth oddest, largest automaker.
Joe in Rice Lake, hi. Joe, are you there?
Hey, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, good morning. I'm just intrigued by the first several callers, and your guest is going to cringe. You know, I'm one of these geo nuts again. I'm driving from Rice Lake to Red Wing in my 2011 Hyundai Elantra Limited that says 40 miles per gallon highway, and I'm showing 32 right now. That's about all I consistently do. But with these old geos that I had, 45, 50, you bet. And it's just like I'm sitting in my heated seat. I've got my GPS on. I'm talking to you with Bluetooth. But again, it's so nice in some regards, but again, it doesn't come anywhere close to what it's stating it's getting. And, you know, and being a conspiracy theorist, you know, are the big auto industry people trying to get rid of cars like this altogether or what? They really did work. They really did get 50 miles to the gallon, and they're gone.
Michelle.
Right. I don't know what more I can say about the whole Geo thing. I'm shocked there are still so many on the road. I mean, my sister had three of them, too. So, you know, I don't know what more to say.
I think they should all have a gathering somewhere in Wisconsin. It would be a lot of fun for all of you who have called in. I'm just wondering, when you say the average length of keeping a car now is 11 years, that is so different than what it was not all that long ago. Didn't auto companies lose a whole lot of money because people weren't buying cars every 4 years?
Well, auto companies lost money for a lot of different reasons. They actually lost money when they were selling a lot more cars. I mean, one of the reasons General Motors and Chrysler went into bankruptcy is just because of the health care costs and the legacy costs. From they had way more workers who were, you know, retired or on layoff than they did were actually working. So, you know, the economics of the whole auto industry are complicated. But what we're seeing now is the companies have restructured and they can make money selling fewer cars. I don't know if that answered your question,
yeah.
But
okay, yeah, it does. Karen in Oshkosh, hi.
Hi, I have a Volkswagen Eos that's about a year old.
Yeah,
and I absolutely it's a hardtop convertible, and I absolutely love it. I understand. I know part of me thinks I should have bought a Prius, and but the other part of me wants something in my older years here that is really nice. Now, the questions I have about I have two questions. One about the Eos. I haven't seen very many ratings in it. Is it on various factors like safety and that sort of thing? Is it still too new to do that? And secondly, how does Volkswagen compare with some of the other manufacturers you were talking about, the Kia and all of that?
Well, I'm sure there's. Go on Edmunds.com, look up the Volkswagen Eos. I'm sure we have all the safety ratings and all that. Anything you want to know on the car. It's kind of a niche vehicle and popular with women, by the way. But Volkswagen's an interesting story because Volkswagen, you wouldn't know it here in the United States, but Volkswagen is one of the biggest automakers in the world. General Motors actually is going to win that title this year, but Volkswagen's going to be right behind it with Toyota right behind it.
All right.
But Volkswagen has not been huge here in the United States. They were one of the first import companies to come to the United States. They did really well, they had huge numbers of sales for an import company long before Toyota and Honda were on the scene, by the way. And they built a plant in Westmoreland, Pennsylvania. They had a lot of quality problems there with the Volkswagen Rabbit that they made. And then they kind of lost interest in the United States, so they kind of withdrew, and they were here, but not in great, you know, sales numbers. Well, there has been there's a renewed interest in the United States, and Volkswagen has very lofty sales goals here for the United States. They want to sell, between Volkswagen and Audi, they want to sell 1 million cars here. They're not even close to that now. They have built a new plant in Chattanooga, Tennessee, which is building the new Volkswagen Passat. We expect that any time now they'll make an announcement that they want to build an Audi here so they can grow that luxury brand. And part of that is you're seeing the German automakers build and expand their plants here in the United States a lot, having to do, first of all, they want to build cars where they sell them, but they also want to diminish the effect of currency fluctuations. So Volkswagen is a company we are watching very closely because they've set this lofty goal for expectations, and we're going to measure them on how they're doing.
Hmm. Okay. The only problem I have with my Eos, and it's not really a problem, I knew it in advance, is I have to use premium gas.
No, that's the thing with, you know, that's where I think the American companies have done a better job over the German companies. But, yeah, a lot of import vehicles have to have premium gas.
Hmm. Thank you,
Karen.
Yeah, thanks for your call. Carolyn Hudson, hi.
Hi, I have a question about the electric cars. What are coming down the pipe for that, and are they going to be basically hybrids with gasoline? And also, when's the infrastructure going to go into place for that? And I'll take my call off the air.
Thanks, Karen.
If I knew the answer to that last question, I'd be, you know, a very rich consultant or something. The infrastructure is exactly the problem. Well, one of the big problems with electric vehicles. Here's how I think we'll see it play out. We'll see mostly hybrids going forward. We're various kinds of hybrid. There's anything from light hybrid to full-blown hybrids like the Prius. In fact, the Prius family is growing. There's a new model on display at the Detroit show that's a smaller, less expensive version. They've also got a family version with more cargo space. So you're going to see a lot more hybrids. You're going to see electric. We've seen the Nissan Leaf, the Chevrolet Volt, which we do not consider a electric car because you can still, it has a gasoline engine that powers the battery. But you'll see things like that. Mitsubishi's got a new electric car called the I, and the Ford Focus is coming in an electric version. So you're going to see a lot more of that. The growth in that market is probably not going to be huge for a while, especially because of the infrastructure. But that's to meet 20, 25, 52 some miles per gallon fuel economy, we're going to have to see more electrification of vehicles. The infrastructure is growing, but at a much smaller pace, and you see it far more on the coast. You'll see, you know, charging stations in L.A. and New York and places like that. You know, we see a few here in Detroit because it's such a Motown place, but it's going to be a slow go.
We don't have time for the whole email. Martin in New Berlin, who's a fan of Subarus, when you talked about station wagons, they still make one. You like them, I could tell.
Well, no, I mean, Subaru's done really well with station wagons. I'm sorry I left them out, and they had the fourth record year of sales in a row.
Ooh. Let's go to one more call. William in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to, you know, put out there that, you know, people are complaining about EPA ratings, and, you know, they're for comparison only. I mean, the EPA isn't going to go out and drive every car, and, you know, Consumer Reports does it, but, you know, they don't do every car. Not everyone subscribes to it, but the numbers are useful when you're comparing, you know, like new cars when you're going out and buying. If one's 32, one's 34, the 34 will get better mileage than the 32.
Right.
You're not necessarily going to get 34.
Mm-hmm. Right. Good point.
Yeah, it is a good point. Michelle, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank
you. Was really fun. Enjoyed it. Michelle Krebs, and she is editor-in-chief of AutoObserver.com. She has been covering the auto industry for over 30 years, writing for the New York Times, Motor Trend, a number of different publications. That was fun, wasn't it? Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Chrissy Pease for on-air production in our downtown Milwaukee studios. A reminder, tomorrow during this hour, the biography, and this is a big biography, almost 1,000 pages long, of Van Gogh. The authors will be with us tomorrow during this hour. I think the book is fabulous, so it will be an interesting conversation about a man who many of us find extremely fascinating. So thanks for listening. Great conversations ahead on the Ideas Network.